One morning in August 1886, as heat rose from the streets with the intensity of a child's fever, a man calling himself H.H. Holmes walked into one of Chicago's train stations. The air was stale and still, suffused with the scent of rotten peaches, horse excrement, and partially combusted Illinois anthracite. Half a dozen locomotives stood in the train yard, exhaling steam into the already yellow sky. Holmes acquired a ticket to a village called Inglewood in the town of Lake, a municipality of 200,000 people that abutted Chicago's southernmost boundary. The township encompassed the Union Stockyards and two large parks, Washington Park, with lawns, gardens, and a popular racetrack, and Jackson Park, a desolate, undeveloped waste on the lakeshore. Despite the heat, Holmes looked fresh and crisp. As he moved through the station, the glances of young women fell around him like wind-blown petals. He walked with confidence and dressed well, conjuring an impression of wealth and achievement. He was 26 years old. His height was 5 feet 8 inches. He weighed only 155 pounds. He had dark hair and striking blue eyes, once likened to the eyes of a mesmerist. "The eyes are very big and wide open," a physician named John L. Capon later observed. "They are blue. Great murderers, like great men in other walks of activity, have blue eyes." Capon also noted thin lips, tinted by a full dark mustache. What he found most striking, however, were Holmes' ears. It is a marvelously small ear, and at the top it is shaped and carved after the fashion in which old sculptors indicated deviltry and vice in their statues of satyrs. Overall, Capon noted, he is made on a very delicate mold. To women as yet unaware of his private obsessions, he was an appealing delicacy. He broke prevailing rules of casual intimacy. He stood too close, stared too hard, touched too much and long, and women adored him for it. He stepped from the train into the heart of Inglewood and took a moment to survey his surroundings. He stood at the intersection of 63rd and Wallace. A telegraph pole at the corner held fire alarm box number 2475. In the distance rose the frames of several three-story homes under construction. He heard the concussion of hammers. Newly planted trees stood in soldierly ranks, but in the heat and haze, they looked like desert troops gone too long without water. The air was still, moist, and suffused with the burned licorice scent of freshly rolled macadam. On the corner stood a shop with a sign identifying it as E.S. Holton Drugs. He walked. He came to Wentworth Street, which ran north and south and clearly served as Inglewood's main commercial street, its pavement clotted with horses, drays, and phaetons. Near the corner of 63rd and Wentworth, he passed a fire station that housed Engine Company No. 51. Next door was a police station. Years later, a villager with a blind spot for the macabre would write, "While at times there was a considerable need of a police force in the Stockyards district, Inglewood pursued the even tenor of its way with very little necessity for their appearance other than to ornament the landscape and see the cows were not disturbed in their peaceful pastures." Holmes returned to Wallace Street, where he had seen the sign for Holton Drugs. Tracks crossed the intersection. A guard sat squinting against the sun, watching for trains, and every few minutes lowered a crossing gate as yet another locomotive huffed past. The drugstore was on the northwest corner of Wallace and 63rd. Across Wallace was a large, vacant lot. Holmes entered the store and there found an elderly woman named Mrs. Holton. He sensed vulnerability, sensed it the way other men might capture the trace of a woman's perfume. He identified himself as a doctor and licensed pharmacist and asked the woman if she needed assistance in her store. He spoke softly, smiled often, and held her in his frank, blue gaze. He was good with conversation, and soon she revealed to him her deepest sorrow. Her husband, upstairs in their apartment, was dying of cancer. She confessed that managing the store while caring for him had become a great burden. Holmes listened with moist eyes. He touched her arm. He could ease her burden, he said. Not only that, he could turn the drugstore into a thriving establishment and conquer the competition up the block. His gaze was so clear and blue. She told him she would have to talk to her husband. She walked upstairs. The day was hot, Flies rested on the windowsill. Outside, yet another train rumbled through the intersection. Cinder and smoke drifted like soiled gauze past the window. She would talk to her husband, yes, but he was dying, and she was the one who now managed the store and bore its responsibilities, and she had come to a decision. Just thinking about the young doctor gave her a feeling of contentment she had not experienced in a long while.